It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Anti-Islamist forces launch airstrikes on militants in Benghazi. Egypt's former army chief appears headed for landslide election victory. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Libyan warplanes Wednesday bomb militia bases in the eastern city of Benghazi. Forces loyal to former General Khalifa Haftar launched two strikes on the pro-Islamist February 17 Martyrs Brigade compound. Haftar and his so-called National Libyan Army have been fighting militants for months. His forces, which overran parliament earlier this month, have vowed to fight against what they call an illegitimate government, its Islamist allies, as well as regional and Al-Qaeda-affiliated militia. In Egypt, after 3 days of voting for a new president, the celebrations are already underway. This is what it sounded like late Wednesday in Cairo's Tahrir Square after early results show former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi heading for an overwhelming victory. The first results give Mr. Sisi some 93% of the vote, while the only other candidate in the election, leftist politician Hamdine Sabahi, had around 3%. Naga Ahmed says she's thrilled by the results so far. She says she would refrain from eating and drinking if that would support Mr. Sisi. We are going to stand by him, she says. Voter turnout was a low 44%, even after voters were given an extra day Wednesday to cast ballots. Final official results expected next week. The Muslim Brotherhood urged an election boycott, accusing Mr. Sisi and his allies of frauds and tricks. It called a Sisi president a continuation of the military takeover of Egypt that began when the army overthrew Islamist President Mohamed Morsi last year. Muslim rebels killed at least 11 people seeking refuge in a church in the capital of Central African Republic. Witnesses to the attack Wednesday in Bangui say as many as 30 may have been killed. They say Muslim gunmen threw grenades and fired bullets into the church compound. It was the worst attack blamed on Muslims since their Seleka rebel group was ousted from power in January. In Nigeria, authorities in the northeast have revised downward the number of schoolgirls abducted by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram after discovering that four more than previously thought had escaped. It's now believed that 219 girls are still being held after dozens escaped their captors. In Abuja, a peaceful demonstration demanding the return of the girls turned violent Wednesday, and protest organizer Obi Aghele Ezekwesili accused the government of hiring thugs to disrupt their daily rally.
What we see here today is a throwback to the an inglorious era in this country, and it was the military era that we last saw this kind of an abuse. Look at these citizens. They are being abused by their own government.
One activist said scores of young men armed with bottles and stones attacked the mostly women protesters. Some of the men were reportedly holding posters supporting President Goodluck Jonathan. The French press agency reports some groups claim the mass kidnapping has been sensationalized to embarrass Mr. Jonathan. In Sierra Leone, the French press agency says a second death has been reported from the Ebola virus, while six patients are currently under treatment. Sunday, the country reported its first fatality from Ebola. In Guinea, Reuters reports the capital Conakry recorded its first new Ebola cases in more than a month, while previously unaffected areas to the north have also reported new cases. The World Health Organization has recorded more than 280 cases since March, with 185 deaths in Guinea, 11 in Liberia. Dr. Pierre Formenti, who's a WHO scientist, spoke to reporters in Geneva Wednesday after visiting Guinea. He says the situation in West Africa is serious and says authorities in the region are taking the matter very seriously. He says the challenge is the public getting its cooperation to keep the disease from spreading. The head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, Wednesday hailed the progress made by African economies in the past decade, calling it nothing short of remarkable. Speaking in Maputo, Ms. Lagarde cautioned there's a long way to go to deal with issues such as extreme poverty. A 90-minute strike by substitute Uche Nofor gave Nigeria a come-from-behind draw of 2-2 with Scotland in a friendly match played Wednesday in London. The match was surrounded by controversy amid allegations of attempted match-fixing. Officers from the National Crime Agency were investigating. Nigeria now takes its World Cup preparations to the United States, where it will meet fellow qualifiers Greece and the United States. Nigeria is the current Africa Cup of Nations champion. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroonian and Nigerian leaders join forces against Boko Haram.
And as far as Cameroon is concerned, when the head of state declare war against organizations like Boko Haram, now this is the people who have to fight to win this battle.
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's information minister. We'll get reaction to reports that former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo has offered to negotiate the release of kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls. Early results in Egypt's presidential election show huge lead for former Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. And Sierra Leone confirms another Ebola death.
It is an epidemic because one case of Ebola is considered an epidemic. And as of now, we've moved our activities from preparedness to response.
Dr. Amara Jambai is Director of Disease Prevention and Control at the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health. The WHO tries to contain Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and a leading voice in American literature, Maya Angelou, has died. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon's information minister says President Paul Biya and his counterpart, Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, have been communicating as part of a collaborative effort to defeat Boko Haram militants. Issa Chiroma says Cameroon will not allow the militants to use its territory to launch attacks on unarmed civilians in neighboring countries. Chiroma tells reporter Peter Clotty that Cameroon, together with Nigeria and other neighboring countries, are committed to combat terrorism.
What I can tell you is that the head of state, as you said, has declared war. And as far as Cameroon is concerned, when the head of state declare war against organization like Boko Haram, now this is the people who have to fight and to overcome and to win this battle. And we are very much pleased to know that you have many other nations, including United States, European Union, France, UK, and China, all those nations have decided to join the five other African nations to fight Boko Haram. So as far as the strategy is concerned, given the fact that BOA is listening all over the world, it is inappropriate to reveal our strategy. I think that you can understand it.
What about the issue of intelligence sharing and security cooperation between not only Nigeria and Cameroon, but other nations in the region affected by the terrorism activities of Boko Haram?
We are fighting an asymmetric war against Boko Haram, which means that nobody knows who is Boko Haram, and for the time being, where lies their headquarters, where are their base. That's the reason why I said that we are fighting a symmetric war. But as far as intelligence, as information is concerned, it is indispensable. Nigeria and Cameroon are sharing information. The people in Cameroon, as far as Nigeria is concerned, we are sharing information, and it is indispensable to listen to each other, to share this information with the assistance of our friendly countries. I think that, yes, at the end of the day, we shall make it. We will overcome them. No problem. It is just a matter of days or I don't know, but for sure, they will be overcome and we will defeat them.
There were initial reports that Boko Haram have smuggled some of the school children they abducted in Chibok into Cameroon villages. What information do you have about that, and how is Cameroon strengthening its borders with Nigeria to prevent Boko Haram from using your country to launch attacks against Nigeria or using Nigeria to attack your border towns?
As far as the girl who was abducted and who today are hostage are concerned, I have always said that they are not in Cameroon.
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. A second report in days has surfaced indicating that former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo has been holding talks with intermediaries of Boko Haram in an effort to obtain the release of the kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls. Media advisor to President Goodluck Jonathan, Ruben Abate, told VOA earlier this week he has seen the report but could not say whether President Jonathan has sought the intervention of former President Obasanjo. Chika Onyeni is a Nigerian and publisher of the New York-based African Sun Times newspaper. He tells me whatever former President Obasanjo does, it should not be done without the blessing of the Nigerian government.
Everybody all over the world wants the girls to be released. And any kind of help in terms of former President Obasanjo offering to negotiate with Boko Haram, but it should not be over the head of the Nigerian president. 2 weeks ago, the president of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan, had made it plain that there wouldn't be any negotiation in terms of prisoner swap. So I don't understand, if that is the case, why the former president will go over his head to negotiate with the Boko Haram without his consent. This has happened before, where the government negotiated and exchanged the prisoners for release of some of the girls that have been captured. The thing is that Boko Haram now knows that every time they want to negotiate for something, for the prisoner release of their people who have committed heinous crimes, so that all they have to go and do is capture schoolgirls.
I talked with the advisor of President Goodluck Jonathan. I brought the story up to say, does the president know about this report that former President Obasanjo held talks to seek the release of the girls? And the advisor could not confirm or deny. He said to me that he had just read the story himself and he needed time before they can react to it.
Well, the thing is that if you spoke to the advisor on media and he said he didn't know about it, that goes a long way to, I can't say it discredits the story or not, because it's quite a long article on that, on one of the papers, that knows what is happening in the western area of Nigeria. Who should know what is going on with the former president? They should know.
In the past year or so, former President Olusegun Obasanjo and Jonathan have not been on good terms. As you know, the former president wrote a letter criticizing Jonathan. So why would he want to seek the release of the girls?
Well, gents, the thing is that there is always a posturing on the part of former President Obasanjo in terms of his standing in the world. Of course, there are people who take him as a statesman. There are people like former Ambassador Andrew Young who are trying to push for him to get a Nobel Peace Prize.
Chika Onyeni is a Nigerian and publisher of the New York-based African Sun Times newspaper. You are speaking with me from New York City. Sierra Leone health officials say a second person has died from the Ebola virus days after the government reported its first Ebola death. Dr. Amara Jambai, director of disease prevention and control at the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation, says the dead woman was one of the seven Ebola patients at a government isolation facility in Kenema. Dr. Jambai tells me the disease has become an epidemic in Sierra Leone and the government has moved its activities from preparedness to response, including bringing in experts from the outside.
Up to now, we've had seven confirmed cases, three of which are currently at the Kenema Hospital. One has died and the other four are in the same locality in Kwendu.
Is this becoming an epidemic from the viewpoint of your government?
It is an epidemic because one case of Ebola is considered an epidemic. And as of now, we've moved our activities from preparedness to response. So as of now, we have changed gear. We have started to bring in experts. We have started to bring in support from partners who have had this experience, more especially WHO. WHO fielding about 10 experts, and MSF will bring in a viral hemorrhagic kit very soon so that we can take on the disease at the point of location nearest to the border to Guinea.
If it is an epidemic, then perhaps there's a possibility now we can have more deaths.
Well, we are hopeful that we don't have deaths. But to say that we will not have cases, the cases have started. That is why we are really advising people to visit the nearest health facility when they have symptoms similar to Ebola. And your chances improve the earlier you go to the health facility.
Doctor, what can you tell us? There's a report that some sick patients were allowed to go back to their village. Some family members took them back to their village because they didn't want them to be in the hospital.
Yeah, that is better put. The one case that had been identified, we had wanted to transport the case down to Kenema for isolation because at that moment we did not have an isolation unit at the point at which the outbreak occurred. So we wanted to move the patient. But relatives of the patient disagreed, and all of a sudden they removed their relatives from the health facility and they went off to their villages.
Dr. Amara Jambai is Director of Disease Prevention and Control at the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. The time is now 16 minutes past the hour. The World Health Organization says it is helping to contain the spread of Ebola in West Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization warns the Ebola outbreak is spreading because many people do not understand how the virus is transmitted from one person to another. A scientist with the WHO's Control of Epidemic Diseases, Pierre Fromenti, saw an example of this in a remote village in Sierra Leone. He says earlier this week, relatives of several Ebola patients removed them from a health facility in the town of Kwandu and took them home, despite protests from medical staff. He tells VOA the consequences of this action are now being seen.
Of course, by doing that, they expose themselves, they expose the village. They have been, since this happened on Monday evening, late, by being that, of course, they expose themselves, again, by being very close to patients suspect to be Ebola. Some of them are confirmed already, and we heard that one of them died already in the village.
Dr. Fromenti says he does not believe the disease will spread beyond the villages where the patients were taken because they are all very sick and are not able to move around. But he says it is critical people understand the disease is transmitted by close contact with infected patients and this should be avoided. Periodic Ebola epidemics have hit Central Africa since 1976. But the current outbreak, which was first identified in Guinea in February, is the first to erupt in West Africa. Dr. Fromenti says the fact this is West Africa's first outbreak of Ebola is working against containment of the disease. He says people do not understand the course of the disease or how to treat it. He says it is of utmost urgency this information be conveyed to all. He says teams of experts are being sent to Guinea and Sierra Leone to address villagers' resistance to changing their behavior so they can protect themselves and others from becoming infected with Ebola. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Early results in Egypt's presidential election show former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi heading for an overwhelming victory. The first results give Sisi about 93% of the vote, while the only other candidate, leftist politician Hamdine Sabahi, has around 3%. As Heather Murdoch reports for VOA from Cairo, activists say the Kaush party has sent a powerful message about what Egyptians want from their government.
During the 2011 revolution, activists on the streets jokingly referred to Egyptians who stayed home as the Hizbul Kanaba, or the Kaush party. The name stuck, and it applies to most Egyptians who want to live their lives, feed their families, and do not care all that much who occupies the presidential palace. Abdulrahman Hani is the opposite of the Kanaba. He is a human rights worker who took to the streets in 2011, later protested military rule, and he joined the crowds in 2013, demanding the resignation of Mohamed Morsi, Egypt's last president. But this week, he did not vote. He says in this election, he is proud to be a Kanaba member because he does not support either candidate. Former army chief and de facto Egyptian leader Abdel Fattah al-Sisi will surely win, he says, and challenger Hamdine Sabahi's campaign lends legitimacy to the election. For the second day, trending on Twitter in Egypt was "Withdraw Sabahi" in Arabic, posted by activists that want the opposition to pull out in order to tarnish the Sisi victory. Several political parties boycotted the election, including Mr. Morsi's party, the now banned Muslim Brotherhood. Analysts say low voter turnout could be a combination of boycotts and voter apathy. Everyone knows who will win, and Egyptians are tired of voting after six elections in 3 years. At this polling station near downtown Cairo, one voter casts her ballot. Hanan says she was not going to come, but after they extended the vote for a third day, she felt she had to. Hanan looks nervous as she explains that she felt they were very determined that people vote, but she does not say who they are. Authorities have threatened to fine non-voters, and some boycotters have reported being harassed. But election officials say the government will not enforce a fine upon what could be tens of millions of people who registered but did not vote. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Cairo.
Poet, author, playwright, professor, composer, and actress Maya Angelou was a modern Renaissance woman. Her death Wednesday at her home in North Carolina silenced a leading voice in American literature. Fifth Lapidus has more on Angelou's life and career.
Born in St. Louis, Missouri in 1928, Maya Angelou spent much of her childhood with her grandmother in tiny Stamps, Arkansas. For Southern blacks, those years were a time of racial segregation and economic hardship. What made life tolerable, she said, were the stories, songs, and folk wisdom passed down from one generation to the next. She once described how art worked a special kind of magic at her local black church.
The church I belonged to was even smaller than any aspiration in the town. When all the members were there, we had 32 people in the whole church. And yet, in that church, I learned so much about the power of art to help human beings transcend almost anything.
Her literary career began after writer James Baldwin and other friends heard her childhood stories and urged her to write them down. She published the first volume of her autobiography, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, in 1969. That was followed by six more installments, as well as essays, poetry, plays, and screenplays. Her words inspired students and presidents. She was invited to read a poem at the inauguration of President Bill Clinton in 1993.
Here, on the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning.
Nelson Mandela read Angelou's poem, Still I Rise, at his 1994 inauguration as president of South Africa. Although she never went to college, Angelou was awarded more than 30 honorary degrees, as well as a National Medal of Arts and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Later this week, she was to be presented with an award from Major League Baseball for her civil rights work. She had to cancel her appearance at the ceremony for health reasons. In confirming her death at age 86, Wake Forest University, where she had taught for three decades, called her a national treasure whose life and teachings inspired millions around the world. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Sudan's El Shandi beat Ethiopia's defense 2-0 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Nile Basin Tournament in Khartoum, Sudan on Wednesday. Rwanda's Etincelles and Tanzania mainland's Mbeya City played to a scoreless draw as Kenya's AFC Leopards pipped Burundi's Academy Chite 1-0. Meanwhile, African champions Nigeria and Scotland drew 2-2 in London, United Kingdom in a World Cup build-up match on Wednesday. Angola downed Morocco 2-0 in Faro, Portugal, as Tunisia upstaged their South Korean hosts 1-0 in Seoul. Today, Thursday, Cameroon play Paraguay in Kufstein, Austria. In Nigeria, FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions and Nigeria Golden Eaglets edged their Egyptian peers 3-2 in a friendly match played at the Ahmadu Bello Stadium in Kaduna City, Kaduna State, in north-central Nigeria on Wednesday. The two sides meet again at the same venue on Friday. In Namibia, Telkom Namibia are the first ever title sponsors for the Africa Women's Championships. The commercial breakthrough was revealed by the Telkom Namibia managing director Franz Ndoroma in the Namibian capital Windhoek on Wednesday. The ninth edition of the Africa Women's Championships takes place in Windhoek from the 11th to 25th of October. The top three teams qualify for the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup. Elsewhere, South Africa maintained a reduced lead on the medal table at the Africa Youth Olympic Games in Gaborone, Botswana on Wednesday. They have 18 gold, 11 silver and 8 bronze medals. Egypt is second with 14 gold, 8 silver and 13 bronze medals, as Nigeria is third with 5 gold, 1 silver and 5 bronze medals. They are followed by Algeria, Mauritius, Tunisia, Namibia, Ethiopia, Madagascar, while Kenya and Libya are jointly placed ninth. The Democratic Republic of Congo is 10th, followed by Seychelles, Cameroon, Senegal, Botswana, Morocco, Ivory Coast, Republic of Congo, Ghana, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Equatorial Guinea, and Cape Verde Islands, while Gabon, Guinea, Mali, Sierra Leone, and Togo share the 23rd spot with one bronze medal each. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Just a listener mail for this Thursday morning, May 29th.
As we celebrate today's Democracy Day in Nigeria, I wish President good luck, Ebele Jonathan, his cabinet, and the entire nation a very happy celebration. No matter the threats of terrorists, kidnappers, and other evil men, let us remain steadfast to God and remember the needy in the society, and they shall be well with the righteous, according to the Bible. I am Prince John Ushia,
we thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Early results in Egypt's presidential election show former army chief Abdel Fattah al-Sisi heading for an overwhelming victory. The first results gave Sisi about 93% of the vote, while the only other candidate, leftist politician Hamdin Sabahi, has around 3%. Muslim rebels have killed at least 11 people seeking refuge in a church in the capital of Central African Republic. Witnesses to the attack on Wednesday in Bangui say as many as 30 were killed. They say Muslim gunmen threw grenades and fired bullets into the church compound. Security officials say Libyan warplanes have bombed militia bases in the eastern city of Benghazi as part of a campaign by a rogue former general to root out insurgents in the area. That's it for this Thursday, May 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shrarak, as well as Post Senator Marco Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.